Hello, OT friends, and welcome to the Uncommon OT series. I'm Patricia Modis, and I'm your host. A Filipina-American, native New Yorker, current California transplant, bulldog mama, and an uncommon occupational therapist myself for the past 22 years. On this podcast, you'll hear me proudly feature the unique careers of OT practitioners working in non-traditional and role-emerging practice areas, settings where OT is uncommon. Get a dose of inspiration as you listen to these up-close conversations with fellow OTs sharing about their work, describing their paths, and how they apply their secret OT sauce in these uncommon settings. I invite you to learn, to think outside of the box, and to be energized and motivated to follow in these unconventional paths. Happy listening, friends. Today, I'm super excited to introduce you to our guest of honor, Laura Park Figueroa. Laura is an uncommon occupational therapist whose work revolves around two of her favorite things, nature and business. She is the founder and CEO of Outdoor Kids OT, a nature-based pediatric OT practice, and creator of the Contigo Approach, an evidence-based therapy model to empower pediatric therapists of all disciplines to take their work with children outdoors into nature. She is currently working on a PhD, conducting research on nature-based occupational therapy, and assists nature-based entrepreneurs in her online membership community, which can be found at therapyinthegreatoutdoors.com. For 3 years, she hosted the Mind Your OT Business podcast and recently started a new podcast called Therapy in the Great Outdoors. It's all about the business and practice of nature-based pediatric therapy of all kinds, so check it out. She has been married for 21 years and has 3 children aged 19, 17, and 11. She is living the dream in Madison, Wisconsin, where she has a trail into 124 acres of woods right at the end of her driveway. So without further ado, I'd like to present to you Laura Park Figueroa. Welcome, Laura.
Thank you so much. I am thrilled to be here and I can't wait to talk about nature and business, my two favorite topics, and OT. I should have said that too. I do love OT.
So your 3 favorite topics.
Yeah, right.
Oh, well, I'm so honored to have you here. I'm such a big fan and admirer of your work. Wow. And, you know, particularly your social media messaging and what you say and what you express to OT entrepreneurs out there, specifically in the pediatric and nature-based space, right? But also for OTs who are really just, you know, have this itch to embark into a small business. So I'd love for you to tell us all about that. But before we dive into the more technical, I guess, part of the show, I'd love for you to share with us a little bit about you, a little bit about your background, a little bit about the Laura before OT school and how you came into this type of work.
Well, we were just joking before we hit record, like, do we have 3 hours? Because 20 years is a lot to sum up in a minute or two. But so I think I've been an OT. I was licensed in 2000, but I actually graduated from OT school in 99.
Me too.
So I guess, oh, did you?
Yeah,
we're the same. The reason there was that year-long gap is because I took extra time to do my clinicals, my fieldwork experiences, because I was guiding backpacking trips in Colorado. And my first experience, like, falling in love with nature was leading those trips in Colorado. They were for high school students. I was obviously just done with college, a young adult, I guess you would say. And we led these group trips for high school students. And I remember my program director was a little bit peeved at me because I remember sitting in her office and asking for permission to do this, to kind of do my fieldworks off cycle, right? So instead of summer and fall, I was asking to do one fall and in the spring so that I could have the summer to do this work. And she kept kind of coming back to me saying I couldn't do it. And I was like, well, is there a rule that says I can't do it? Where does AOTA say it? Does NBCOT? Who's, oh, doggy is barking. Sorry. I'm like, what's going on? Is that your dog, your puppy?
Yes, that's my dog. I think the Amazon guy is here, but anywho, yeah. Go on.
Yeah. Okay. Hey. I was just worried it was on my end. I was like, I don't have a dog in my house, do I? So anyway, see, I'm already going over my 1 or 2 minutes I wanted to share my whole career
that's
story.
Okay. There was a distraction. So you get a few extra minutes for that.
So I just remembered saying to her, what in the world? Like, why can I not do this? You're not giving me the chance to do this, but there's no, oh my gosh, the puppy is so cute. You might have to edit out things because I can't focus with the cute puppy here.
That's okay.
I love it. Oh, he's so cute. He's so cute. Okay, where was I? So I basically told her, like, what's preventing me from doing this? Like, is there a rule that says I can't do this? And she didn't have an answer for me. And she kind of had to let me do it because there was no rule that said I couldn't do it. Right.
Yes.
And so I share that story just to say that it's a tiny kind of picture into who I was right at the end of OT school, that I was starting to kind of like do things my own way, like entrepreneurial-ish.
Yes, kind of developing your sense of self.
Yeah, totally. So I was off track a little bit. So then I officially finished, you know, got licensed in 2000. And I went to school at University of Missouri. So I grew up in the Midwest. I grew up in St. Louis, went to school at University of Missouri, and I was just always itching to get out. My parents were like, you're going in state because that's what's cheap. And we didn't have a lot of money. So as soon as I was done, I moved to San Francisco, California. I'm out of here. I want to be on the West Coast. I like wish that I was a California girl and I wanted to live there. And then this is going to get way too long. So basically, long story short, I like had met my husband in St. Louis before I moved. He was in school there. I was in California. We ended up like whirlwind romance, getting married very quickly, which has worked out. We've stayed married 21 years. Not always easy at
Congratulations.
Times. Congratulations. Okay? But basically what happened was I ended up moving back to St. Louis and then lived in Miami, Florida for 4 years. And then finally was like, hey, I wanted to live in California before I met you. Remember, I was living in California and then you brought me back to St. Louis for you to finish school. And now we've been in Miami for 4 years. So now let's go back to California. So we were back in California for 14 years and just recently came back to Madison, Wisconsin, where he grew up nearby in Milwaukee to be near his parents because they are 87 and 91. And I am surprising myself with how much I love Wisconsin. I just love
total
the
change
nearby.
Of scenery. Yeah,
totally. So all along this way, like I kind of told my personal story more than my OT story, but all along the way, like when I was leading those backpacking trips in Colorado, I remember there was a moment when I was standing on top of one of those mountains and we were high, like at 14,000 feet. And I remember, cause I was fresh out of OT school. I remember thinking like, I want to do something with kids and nature. And at the time, I think I was thinking more about accessibility, which who knows, maybe that's something I'm going to get into in the future, but like my work is a little different than that right now. But because I just was so heartbroken that there were kids that would never be able to be in the spaces that I was in because we were so deep in the backcountry, right? So anyway, I had that thought, but then, you know, all that stuff happened. I got married. I had 3 children along the way, like 3 children, 3 different cities,
life.
One in St. Louis, one in Miami, one in Berkeley. And then I just, you know, I was working as an OT. I worked in a pediatric outpatient hospital setting. I've worked in private clinics at different times throughout my career. I did NICU for a while. I did an intensive training in the NICU and worked there for a year or two, maybe a year. We moved from Miami right after I finished the training. They probably weren't so happy that they had invested that time in me when we moved away. But and then in California, I mostly worked in school-based practice. And that was what almost killed me, to be honest. Like that, I almost left the profession. I was so burned out. I was so tired. Just dealing with the lack of resources, the lack of time, the the confines of how a large urban public school setting has to exist and how it educates children. It just, everything was so overwhelming to me and so not in your ideal OT pediatric brain, how you would want it, right? And so it was just hard. And I really tried. I actually did a lot of things differently in that job. I really tried to push in as much as possible and do a lot of whole class things. And I remember my colleagues being like, why are you doing that? I'm like, because it's like how we should be practicing in the schools, you know? So I've always, I don't know, I've always had the kind of bent to do things differently. I've always just been really fiercely independent. And I did do some private practice before I actually like started my practice and really became an entrepreneur. But I never really thought like an entrepreneur until I found like my North Star, you might say, like the thing that I really, really love, which is nature-based practice, you know? Yes. So, I started out in, kind of getting into working in the outdoors with children through a large organization running like large camps for kids, which were not marketed as occupational therapy camps. And what I found is that there were some kids that were at my large group camps that I was running that needed more support. And those were the kids that I really wanted to work with. I really wanted to work on a smaller, in a smaller group with kids on a smaller scale with a more intensive, you know, really providing therapy support for them. But, you know, partnering with nature and harnessing the benefits that nature can provide for our pediatric clients, like the young kids that we see. So that's when I kind of moved from that large group model to doing outdoor kids OT. I was running both for a little bit. And I just started experimenting, really. I started taking kids outdoors, like individually for therapy and just playing with the idea. I mean, I literally told their, there were parents that knew me. I'd been their therapist for a while. Like I saw them in a clinic and I just said, I legit am asking you if I can like use your child as a guinea pig. Like, like I don't know what I'm doing here. You know, like
I love it.
I just straight told them and we had a trusting relationship. They trusted me. I mean, they weren't a stranger to me, but it was so life-giving and so exciting. And I saw that the kids just light up in a way that I never saw in a clinic setting. You know, I actually think sometimes clinic settings can be completely overwhelming to the type of children that they are meant to serve. Yes. And nature just doesn't have that effect for most kids. I mean, for some kids, nature can be hard too, right? Like no environment is perfect, but, so yeah, 20 minutes later into my whole life story here,
You touched upon a few of our other questions. So, you know, we made up some time for that.
Great.
But, you know, when you said earlier about kids and accessibility and kind of that was sort of your first thought or idea coming out of OT school and how you can sort of spin this passion of yours. And, you know, the way that I kind of look at you providing your services in nature is being accessible, so to speak, right?
Because,
I mean, I know the school setting is generally like school-based OTs. Yes, you're focusing on the kids' ability to function within the school setting, even though it's kind of hard to tweeze out, you know, other things that are happening in their lives. But outdoors and life is also another setting where a kid functions. So I love that, you know, you found that you found that niche and you found that need.
Yeah, it was, I have to say though, it was, there did become a point, and I hope this will encourage someone who's listening. Like, I think a lot of us start businesses on the side of what we're doing, right? So I was in almost, I think I was working 4 days a week in the schools and seeing kids in a clinic at night to kind of try to start seeing more private kids with the goal of leaving school-based practice and running my own thing. Right. And it was a little bit scary when I actually realized that what I really wanted to do was to go all in or all out on the outdoors idea. Right. Like I wanted to not see kids inside at all. And I wanted to say, this is what I'm going to focus on. This is what I want to do. And It actually happened. I'll tell a little story because I know stories are very interesting to the human brain. It actually happened because a friend of mine who at the time was doing some life coaching, I was just talking to her on the playground at my kids' school after school one day while the kids played. And she was like, so how's work? How are you doing building the private practice, whatever? And I was like, you know, it's fine. But what I really want to do is I just want to be outdoors for all of my sessions. Like I love the outdoor sessions. I don't even want to be inside anymore. And she was like, what's stopping you from doing that? Just do it. And I was like, I don't know. I'm like, I'd have to get a website. I'd have to like do all the, she was like, Laura, you go home today and you make a website and you put yourself out there and say that you're doing it because you know, what's going to happen is someone else is going to do it. And then you're going to wish that you had done it. So do it, girl, go do it. Better done than perfect. She's the first person who said better done than perfect to me. The thing I always say. So I credit her. I mean, I've quoted her so many times. You know, when I run into her online or whatever, I still say to her, like, you're the reason Outdoor Kids OT exists. So I did it. I went home that night. I picked a name. I made the website myself. And I told all my current clients that I was going to do it and go all in on the outdoor idea. Right. So, and I basically tried to structure the sessions so that all the kids I currently have could participate. And if they didn't want to go outdoors, then I just referred them to other people that were indoor, you know, indoor clinic-based therapists for them to continue getting treatment. But they actually all except one followed me into nature, and mostly because he was a little older than some of the other kids. So it wasn't really appropriate for him. But so that was the start, and it was just me for 2 years, I think. It's all foggy now because it's 6 years ago, but it was just me for 2 years. So I was a solopreneur for 2 years. But right from the start, I started writing things down that worked and that didn't work, because in my brain, I was like, I am so invigorated doing this and I want to help other therapists share. Do this. You know? Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Well, so, thanks so much for sharing, you know, your background and sort of how you evolved into nature-based Laura OT, right? I talk about this all the time on the podcast, just about how, you know, when you're practicing for a while, you evolve, right? Your vision changes. You want to make some shifts. Your life changes, right?
And yeah.
Your vision changes as a result of that. So I love that your vision has just gotten more refined over time, and you know, you're so much more focused now, even I think more than ever, and exactly what it is that you want to offer to the world, which I think is a great segue into our next thing. But yes, go ahead.
Yes. Oh, I just want to add on before we segue that. That is so important for people to hear, because I will tell you straight up that at the beginning of Outdoor Kids OT, I remember thinking, well, I have no idea what this is going to be in 3 years. Like maybe we take kids paddleboarding and we do outdoor camping trips and we do, you know, like I had all these, like in my brain, I was just kind of like, whatever this becomes, it becomes. And I share that story to say, like, you do not have to have all the answers to just get started doing something.
Yes.
That's not what Outdoor Kids OT became. That's not what the vision that kind of unfolded. Like we got very good at doing outdoor therapy groups. That is like what we do in nature. That's our specialty. That's what we're good at. And it's much easier in business to get very, very good at providing one thing and then add the next thing when you're very good at that, because anything you add to your business requires new systems, right? But at the very beginning, I didn't know what it was going to become. It wasn't like I knew right away, oh, I'm going to develop an approach and I'm going to write a book and I'm going to, you know, I have this whole frame in my brain of what I'm going to do. I'm huge on people having frameworks. That is a big thing. I have an episode on my podcast where I talk about it. But also those frameworks do not emerge. It's a messy process.
Yes.
To come up with a framework to have your whole business be organized in a certain way with what you specialize in. So when you start, just don't worry about that stuff. Just find what you love to do and start slowly doing it. And that'll all come later, you know? So I'm glad you said that, because it's very, very true.
And that's coming from experience, right? So thank you for for sharing that. I'm going to ask you that question again a little bit later, just in terms of advice, and maybe you can start collecting your thoughts.
Yeah.
On other tidbits that you can give us. But you know, I wanted to segue into what you were just talking about, which is, you know, today, can you describe to us a little bit the uncommon OT work that you do? Who do you serve? What are your offerings and all that good stuff?
Yeah. So my work is really uncommon because I really am working in right now. I'm not saying I'll never go back to practice, but right now I'm not delivering the services in my business. I'm not a therapist who is working with the kids in my business. Now, am I leading a team of people who are doing that? Yes. Like, did I develop a treatment approach that we use? Yes. But I'm very uncommon right now because I'm really existing in like a CEO kind of role. Yes. So my job right now, I really see my job as making sure that the systems are in place and the people are in place to support my team and to support the growth of the business. Mm-hmm. So I spend most of my days, you know, it's not constant communication. Some days I talk with my therapist more than others because of things that come up. But like generally, I'm communicating with the practice manager of Outdoor Kids OT, who actually works remote. She lives in New York. So I have meetings with her. I spend time on WhatsApp checking in with the therapist. I spend time creating systems around how we're going. I do a lot of marketing because I love it. You don't have to do that as a CEO. So my time is spent on Instagram during the day. Like that is part of my job, is to market and educate on Instagram and Facebook too, in our Facebook group. But that's what I love to do. And it's something I am still doing because we have found in the data that we've taken on the launches that we've done in the past on products that and I don't mean this in like a haughty way, but like when my face is on something, we actually have good results because it's close to my heart. You know, like I can communicate it really well, what we're selling, because I've done so much thinking about the marketing and why we created the products or the courses or the offerings that we have. So I spend a lot of my time creating the systems around marketing too.
I think you're part of the brand. You know, you are your brand, and your brand is, you're honest. You know, you speak the truth.
Yeah.
You tell us through your own, you know, based on your own personal experiences of entrepreneurship. Yeah. So that's the messaging that I've been getting. And I think that's been super, super helpful. So a lot of it.
Yeah. I think it's been hard for me because, you know, even as I speak about it now, like we didn't really talk about this, but I started the podcast probably I started the podcast 3 years after I started my business. And I remember when I was going to start the podcast, I was thinking, should I do a podcast for like nature stuff or should I do a podcast for business? And Nicole, again, my practice manager, who I take her advice all the time because she's very wise. She said, you know, I just think the business stuff, there's such a niche for that. There's nobody really in OT right now. There is, you and a lot of other people are starting podcasts. But at the time, like there wasn't anyone doing a podcast on business stuff and OT, right?
Yes.
So, and it's been so, so much fun. But what is really challenging about what I do is that I, for a long time, have been serving OT entrepreneurs as a large group, and then kind of serving a subset of OT entrepreneurs that are pediatric nature-based people, and then also serving like other pediatric nature-based professionals. So just recently, I made the decision to really niche to the nature-based people, you know? So that's been an interesting shift in my Instagram, because my Instagram at Laura Park Fig is my Instagram. I didn't want anyone to have to try to spell Figueroa. So
and get the U and the E mixed up.
Oh, totally. 100%. Yes. I probably did that when I first got married. But like, I think I think a lot of the things I will still share are relevant to any business owner, but mm-hmm. I've had to really say, like, okay, I'm going to make this for my ideal person is a nature-based pediatric practitioner. And yes. So I'm going to gear my business content towards them. And if it helps other people, great, but that's what I'm going to focus on now. So that has been a real challenge, and I hope maybe helps someone listening. Like, really, when you start a business, don't try to do all the things. Do not do what I did. I mean, it can look very much like, oh, it's successful and all this, but it's really, you'll burn out. I mean, you just get so exhausted trying to serve more than one kind of group of people. So, I'd say it's probably the most common thing that when people are starting a business, when I'm doing coaching, like, the most common thing is I want to do this. I want to do this. I want to do this and this and this and this, because we're
for everyone.
All, yeah, yeah. Totally for everyone. Yes. So just focus and pick one and then grow later.
Yeah, I know. Another like such great, great advice. I think that also it brings me back to kind of OT goals and you know, how you can't really, you kind of had to break them down a little bit. And then from there, you know, you can reach your overall kind of, your overall outcome. Right.
And I love it.
Yeah. So
you just made me think like activity analysis for a business plan, you know, like,
and that's what I was thinking when you were talking about, you know, your work, and I know that you're not in a clinical setting per se, but when you were talking about kind of reaching the masses and marketing and speaking to your clients, right?
Yeah.
I saw that as you know, how do you engage your clients in participating in your service? So, you know, again, another OT specific skill, I think that, you know, comes into play. You're not in a clinical setting, but because it's in you and because you've been doing that for years, I think it just kind of comes naturally in this new uncommon role that you have.
Right. I would encourage people too to just be who you are. I mean, really, the thing that I think is so, that I love so much about social media is that, I can harness this like blatantly honest personality that I have to help educate people, right? So I'm really comfortable sharing my numbers. Like, I literally open my bank account and show people, like, here's how I manage the things, blah, 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 on some of my videos and stuff. So I am comfortable with that. However, I do not expect that every person in the world would be comfortable doing what I do or say on social media. Mm-hmm. And nobody should be like you either on social media. Yeah. Like, you should be yourself, you know? So if you hate social media and you don't want to show up there, well, it might be hard to grow a business, but you can hire people to help you do it, right? Like, so yes. I do think that I just want to encourage anyone listening that if you are not the person who wants to like bare your soul, you know, there's lots of businesses that are very successful where the business owner is not nearly as present or as vulnerable or as honest on social media as I might be, because that's truly who I am. It's very comfortable for me to be like, oh, I just had a $25,000 loss on this event that I made or that I hosted, or, you know, oh, I found out that I was early in my practice using a invoicing software that was not HIPAA compliant. Oops. You know, like, I'll share with people, because I think there's freedom in, it frees other people up to not feel like they have to have all their stuff together when they see someone who's willing to say like, hey, I did this wrong, so learn from me, okay? You don't have to do it wrong.
Yes, and frankly, there's not a lot of OT entrepreneurs out there talking about the things that you're talking about. So it's really refreshing to hear and to kind of see that, you know, someone else is going through this, and, you know, this is what she suggests that we do, so we don't go down the same path. But I also love how, you know, your vision, which kind of sprouted way back in the mountaintops of Colorado, you know, right after OT school, has sort of come full circle, right? So, you know, you had this grand vision, you did all of these things, and then, you know, we won't say the number, but so many years later, you're back to that same place. And it was almost a reminder for you that, you know, this is what I wanted to do, right? So I want to kind of go back to that, because these are my values. And, you know, I think that's why you're so authentic, because your values really so intertwined with the work, and, you know, you're trying so hard to make sure that those two are aligned.
Align. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it comes across on your social media messaging. And I think that message is also so amazing and just so refreshing for OTs, right? Because you can
do both.
That's what I aim for. Do both.
Yes, totally. I actually have a and I know we may talk about it later, but basically the free masterclass that I offer to help people kind of start learning about nature-based pediatric therapy, I tell a story in there about, like, oh, here I am on the mountaintop and I want to do outdoor work with kids outdoors and do OT with them. And then the next slide, well, I'm ruining, like, spoiler alert, everyone. The next slide is like a picture, like a professional headshot of me. And it says, what happened? Like, it's like, I'm outdoors and I'm dreaming. And then it's like, here I am, this professional, you know? And I really do think that I just forgot, like, life kind of got in the way. So I'm glad you brought up the idea of values. And, like, in some ways, I really believe that we can't live thinking what if all the time. Like, it just will ruin your, I actually had an idea for a reel written down. Like, you want to ruin your, like, mindset as an entrepreneur, think what if all day long. Like, what if I had done that instead? And what if I do this instead? So I don't want to live with regrets, but I do want to just honor for anyone out there that may be in this position that I really was not ready to be an entrepreneur until 15 years into my career. Like, I had children I was raising. I had a job that provided great income and great benefits for my family. I was able to buy a home. You know, I mean, there's lots of things that, like, working in a public school job or in a hospital job or whatever, there's lots of things that that those jobs afforded my family, like, lots of really good things. I had time off and I could be with them during the summers. I mean, there were a lot of good things about it. So a lot of times people will ask, well, do you wish that you had started your business earlier? Do you wish that you had? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I can't even answer that question, right? Yeah. Because everything is right in its season. So for me, this season is right to be an entrepreneur. But I'm thankful for those years that I had other jobs, because I really learned in all of those jobs. It gave me the clinical reasoning and the experience to really inform the approach I developed and the work I do outdoors. And so, I don't know. I just want to honor that the path to entrepreneurship might not be super fast for everyone, especially, like, women in our field who may have children, and that that impacts your life, you know? Yeah. So, anyway.
Yeah. And that the path is not going to be always pretty, right? But the even totally. Not so pretty portions are really worthy lessons. You know, I maybe in your case, and maybe I'm, you know, putting words in your mouth, but you want to go back into more, you know, focusing your practice in nature, because maybe focusing it on just general entrepreneurs was taking you away from being in nature, you know, and conversations about being in nature. Yeah. So, you know, even just, like, on a small level, these are the small things that actually, you know, kind of light us up and help us feel excited about our day. So I love that you've found more focus and that you're, you know, branching and evolving. We're always evolving, you know, evolving some more. And there's that comfort level in that, because there's this also, there's a lot of discomfort and evolution too, like, especially during, like, the fuzzy parts. But there's that portion where you get there and you're kind of like, oh, this is great. Yeah. This is what that was all about.
The number one key thing to be successful as an entrepreneur is to persevere, to never give up, to keep investing in yourself and your own development, your own leadership, your own pouring into other people. So, like, it's just a lifelong process. You're never going to arrive where it's like you're comfortable and everything's taken care of. I mean, as much as I talk about systems, I'm like, automate your business, you know, like, I mean, I really do believe in systems to help a business run without the CEO losing their mind. But no business is perfect, and no entrepreneur is perfect. No CEO is perfect. It is just a mess all the time in entrepreneurship. Yeah. And you have to get comfortable with being uncomfortable, and constantly, every time you reach the next phase of your business, the next scaling, the next like product you're going to put out, that all of the feelings of inferiority come back. All those feelings of like, is this really going to work? Like, you just self-doubt and all these things. So the bigger the goal, the bigger the mindset challenge, right? So it's a constant process of growth. And that's what I love about it. And also at times, that's what I hate about it. It's hard. Well, growth hurts.
I know that one topic of entrepreneurship that a lot of therapists feel really uncomfortable with is money matters. Yep. So I know that's also something that you talk about a lot with, I don't know, more comfort, with greater comfortability than most of us. So I don't know. I'm just going to throw that question out there. Talk money matters. Anything you can say about money matters in relation to your business, in relation to OT entrepreneurship?
Yeah, I wish that we would talk about it more.
I know. I was thinking, I wish we had another hour, because we could probably spend another hour talking about that.
Right. That, I mean, but, that topic alone would make a great podcast episode, but I think we need to get rid of our shame around talking about numbers in our business. Like, too many of us will not share publicly. We won't even share with I call them business besties, like a good friend of ours, right? Who maybe runs a business too. We need to get more comfortable actually sharing our numbers, sharing what we're at a basic level, like what your gross revenue is, what you paid yourself, what your payroll is, and what you spent on expenses, you know, like just the basic categories. I mean, and the nittier grittier you get with it, the better you probably would be as far as making decisions, because you'd have something to go on. And that's why I share numbers on my podcast episode from, like, you know, if I launch a product, I'll say we sold this much and this was what we spent on this. And, or I do a year end review episode where I talk about the revenue and how much payroll was and how much taxes were and all of that.
Why do we hesitate? Why do we resist having those conversations, or why is there so little comfortability talking about money matters, you think?
I think because the majority of people in our profession probably entered our profession because they're Enneagram twos, or, you know, if you're not into the Enneagram, which is it's kind of a personality categorizing test, a personality test, but it's the two is a helper. You know, we're all helping professionals, all of us are. And when we're in OT school, what we're taught is to help people. And so it feels counterintuitive for us as therapists to think about taking care of ourselves and paying ourselves, you know?
Yes.
And that seems kind of, or even taking money for our services. You know, if you're an entrepreneur, you have to take money for your services in some way. I mean, even if you're a nonprofit, it's a big misnomer. Nonprofits still have to be profitable. They have to be able to pay their people,
their
you
staff.
Know. Right, exactly. So I think there's that. And I also think that a lot of us are very unaware of money mindset issues that we may have that really become ingrained in childhood. I know I grew up very middle class. Like, my dad had a government job. Like, my mom worked kind of like low wage part-time jobs until she was much older, and even then didn't really have a high paying job. And so we kind of lived on like the side of town with the smaller houses in a good school district. They, you know, they got us into the good school district, but we lived on like the side of town where like the people who weren't very well off lived, you know. We never traveled. We didn't go on vacations, you know, like, I just, there's lots of, well, we drove to Florida to visit my grandparents. So, you know, that was the vacation. We didn't, you know what I mean? We lived a very like comfortable middle-class life, but like not, I grew up with a sense, what I'm communicating here, even in the things I'm sharing here, I grew up with a sense that there was not enough money. Like Like you aren't going to go to that summer camp that your friends are because we can't afford that. Or you're crazy. You want to go study abroad? Like we don't do that in our family. Yes. And even I came up against it, even going to get my post-professional master's and doing my PhD, like you do not do that in my family. Like that is like, even going to college was kind of like, okay, that's the last thing you do. And then you just work a job for 30 years and retire, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think, sharing that story, you can hear how, like, I grew up in a context where money was like a thing to be jealous of. And it was like, not who we were, right? Like, yes. We weren't those people with money. And so it's just an example. I mean, and people have lots of other stories where your money mindset gets entrenched, and it really, really does limit us as business owners and how much money you'll bring into your business and your comfort level. So maybe part of my process has been sharing it publicly to kind of purge all those negative money mindset things. Maybe, I don't know.
I think that's a great step. I also read a book that talked about that and the idea of sort of having a poor man's way of thinking versus a rich man's way of thinking, and
yes.
really how you approach everything that you buy, everything that you earn, how you invest gets affected by that. It's a frame of reference, right?
So totally, totally.
So, yes. And shifting it, it's almost, it reminded me of cultural trauma because it's something that we're sort of,
sure.
you know, we live with it. It's what we know, and really kind of shedding that takes work. So all
Absolutely.
Of this stuff, I'm so happy to hear that, you know, whether it's work or not, right? Whether it's marketing, it's also, you're also working on your own stuff. So that's like double bonus.
Right. Do you know what book did you read? Because I have a couple of books I would share with people about it too.
I was blanking on the name, but I will text it to you and I will add it to our show notes too. It's something about millionaire. Was the word millionaire?
Yeah, I don't know that. Yeah. I don't know that one. The two I just finished reading, and I shared some of this on my Laura Park Fig Instagram. Not my private practice is Outdoor Kids OT, and I don't share business stuff there. It's like nature-based therapy activities for kids over there. So I just shared some because I just read Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich. It's like an old book from the 40s, I want to say, or the 50s. And there's some, you know, there's some dated stuff in there. Okay. Like it only talks about men being successful, not women. Okay.
But I hate it already. Okay.
But here's the crazy thing is like, I had always heard entrepreneurs throw around the name of that book in entrepreneurial spaces. Right. Like, and I had at some point in time, I picked it up at a used bookstore. Like I just saw it at a used bookstore. Maybe it was in a free library or something. And I just like, oh, I heard of this one. I'll get it. And I had looked at it several times before and it just didn't resonate. And just, it's funny how sometimes when you read business books, especially, they won't land for you until you're really ready to hear the information in them.
That's why I said I hate it already, because most of the ones that I've read, I kind of think like, oh gosh, I should be doing more. Or, oh my gosh, I should be doing that. So most of the time I feel terrible.
Yes, absolutely. Like I'm definitely a fan of just in time learning, like learning when you're ready to learn it. Right. So, but I also truly love reading. Like I crave reading, like my eyes want to scan a page of words. Like I just love reading. I've loved reading since I was a kid. I used to like stay up late at night in middle school with Stephen King novels underneath my covers with a flashlight, trying to read like a 1200 page book, you know?
So yes, those are huge.
I've always loved reading. So it served me well as an entrepreneur, but basically like this Think and Grow Rich book by Napoleon Hill, I think I've resisted it because I didn't like the title. It sounded really like gimmicky. And, but the gist of the book, like literally it has so, I literally felt like I highlighted everything in my Kindle app that's it's just so good. There's so many great quotes. It's very inspiring and a lot of really encouraging entrepreneurial content. But the gist of the book is that your mind is the key thing you have to control as an entrepreneur. And if your mind is, you know, thinking you're never going to be rich, then you're never going to be rich.
Never going to be rich. Yeah.
Right. So it's, that book is so, it's like a reference book to me now that I've read the whole thing. Like, I feel like I'll cycle back to it year after year to kind of pick up more information from it as I grow in my entrepreneurial journey. And then the other book, which you will like, when I said the no women in the Think and Grow Rich book, the other book is, she calls herself a money mindset coach. And I just have to give the precursor that I don't agree with everything she says. She's a little woo woo, but if you're woo woo, you'll love it. she is a money mindset coach. Her name's Denise Duffield Thomas. And I think it's Denise DT on Instagram. She wrote a book. She's written several, but she wrote a book called Get Rich Lucky Boo. Okay. Like, I won't say it on the podcast. It rhymes.
I didn't even know if we're allowed. We're not allowed, right? Okay.
I know.
Bleep.
If you have a clean reading. But anyway, she basically says, this gets back to that concept again of our mindset around money, right? She says that the reason she named the book that is because in modern media, like when you see on social media, when you see in movies, when you see in sitcoms, men who are rich are always desirable and powerful and attractive and amazing and all mm-hmm. these great positive
sexy
things, right?
Uh-huh.
Sexy, right? women who are rich are seen as conniving,
controlling
people,
yeah
right? The title of her book, Get Rich mm-hmm. Lucky, like that's why she named it that. And I just love that. I love that she's like, you know what? Break that mindset. Break the mindset of you're going to be a B if you're
rich.
Get rich.
Yes.
You don't. More money does not mean that you become a different person. You can do a lot of good in the world if you have a lot of money. Like,
yes.
More money in the hands of the right people is a good thing in the world, people. Okay. So therapists, think about that. Like, more money in therapists' pockets is a better thing in the world. Like,
yes.
More good people need to have more money in this world. So it's not bad to make money in your business. And I think those two books are for me, have been very helpful resources. And again, I don't agree with everything in them, but mm-hmm. you take what can help you. And it really, really, it's been huge for me in the last year. I actually did a Facebook Live in the OT Entrepreneurs group when I read her book. And I was like, oh my gosh, you guys, it's like the first time in my life that I feel like I can like truly say, I want my business to make $1 million. And I want that to happen in like the next 3 to 5 years. Like,
oh,
I could speak it. I could
yes.
say it and not feel like, oh, people are going to think I'm bad or that I'm evil, that I want to mm-hmm. grow a really successful business, you know? So it's, I could go on and on because it's very like close to my heart right now. I feel like my money mindset has shifted a lot in the last year. So I want that for everyone. I really do.
Thank you for all of those resources and the money
sure.
tips. I mean, so super helpful. I have like so many thoughts going through my head. We're going to list all of those books on our show notes.
Great.
Are there any common myths or misconceptions that you'd like to demystify today about the work that you're doing or any of the work that you're doing? I know you're also doing podcasting and
common myths. We kind of talked about the common myth that you reach a point in business where things are just kind of, you know, set and you're like good and you just kind of stay there. If you're really, in my experience at least, most people that are entrepreneurs, they have this almost insatiable thirst for personal development and growth mm-hmm. in a good way, not in like a frenetic crazy way, but in a mm-hmm. good way. They want to always be learning and growing. And so I think maybe that's not true for everyone, but I think for me, I kind of thought that I would just get my business to a certain level and be fine with that. And that's not how I feel now. I'm like excited for what the future might hold.
Yes.
I'm trying to think of other myths that people, I think in just to hit on the nature topic, one myth that is really true, which I wrote about in one of the emails that I send to my email list, is that you need to be like a naturalist or a botanist or someone who knows all the names of everything.
The flora and the fauna.
Yes, totally. You need to be a zoologist to be an outdoor OT. But that's just not true. Like really, really the key thing to take your work outdoors, even with adults as an OT, is just to love nature. Mm-hmm. Like if you love nature, like that's the first thing. Like, and I think everyone can fall in love with nature. If you don't love nature yet, spend a little more time outside just observing the natural world and you will pretty soon. Like, I think that that's something really innate to us that we have. There's actually a whole theory around it called biophilia hypothesis, that like we as humans have this innate need to connect with other life forms, including plants, but other animals. Like the outdoor mm-hmm. world is so alive and vibrant. And like, as humans, we have this need to connect with the living world, you know? So it's interesting, but yeah, so that might be a nature-based myth that I hope someone hearing this, please DM me on Instagram if that made you go outdoors. That would just make my day.
You made me want to go outdoors. So.
Oh, good, good.
So I know we already talked about advice. Is there any other advice that you'd like to add aside from the ones that we've already talked about?
Oh, man. Who should I speak to with this advice? Like I'm wondering, give me a little more, Patricia, give me a little more guidance with like, who do you want me to talk to with this advice? Because I have unlimited advice. I am an Enneagram 8, so I'll tell you what to do, okay?
Okay, and we are winding down, so let me focus my question. I guess, what would be your advice to OTs who are getting into the field? Or OTs who are new to the field, and also OTs who are just kind of, you know, not really feeling so great about what they're currently doing and just kind of want to embark into something a little bit different. So those folks.
Yeah, no, that's really, really helpful to kind of focus what I would say. And I would say to not stay comfortable, or if I mean, and I mean that by saying, like, if you're really uncomfortable in your job and annoyed by it, like, life's too short. Like, just do something else if you are miserable in what you're doing right now. And so I hate to see like really good OTs stay in a job for 30 years just because that's kind of what, I mean, I kind of spoke to, that's how my family was, right? Like that's like, my dad is like appalled that he has three children who are all entrepreneurs, because he's like, you were supposed to get a job and work for 30 years, you know? and so I say that because part of what is really hard, I think, for OTs in particular, is we have this inferiority complex in general about our own worth as a profession. And that's like in our professional literature from the very early days, there is this sense of uncertainty about the value we offer. And so I want OTs to know that what you do is valuable, and to be able to personally own that as well as own it for the profession. And so I don't want to see any OT stay in a position where they feel undervalued or frustrated or burned out. You know, there's so much you can do with an OT, within the OT profession, and even outside as an OT, but maybe outside of the OT. Yeah. So I want people to know that they can take steps to make changes if they feel like they don't like what they're doing right now, and to just let it be a little messy and let it kind of play with just being curious about things and learn about things and see what actually piques your interest, you know? Yes. So our field is one where you can,
It can also be baby steps, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Part-time, or, you know, once a week, or whatever, that once a month, whatever that might be for you.
Yep. Small steps make great gains over time. That's like what I say at the end of every podcast episode I do. So it's, I mean, that is That is literally the truth. Like, you take tiny little small steps and then you turn around and you're like, wow, that feels like it was like just small steps for a long time. And here I am, you know? So,
yes.
Yeah, I want OTs to love what they do. Life's too short to not love what you do. And I think there's just so much unlimited potential in our field for people to do a variety of different, offer a variety of different things that are of value to people in the world. So, yeah, that's what I would
say. I agree 1,000%.
I know you do. You're a soul sister here. Like, you and me thinking about like uncommon OT roles. I love it.
Oh, Laura, my gosh, this has been so much fun. This has been so just, I don't know, I'm lit up. So thank you so much for spending this time with me, for spending this time with our listeners, for sharing all of your wisdom, for sharing with us your journey and how you got to being the OT that you are today. And I look forward to doing another episode sometime in the future to see where you're at.
Yeah.
And we're for sure going to include all of your contact information and details and resources along with our show notes. And just, yeah, this has been so wonderful. Thank you so very much.
Well, you're so welcome. I want to say, I don't know if I mentioned it earlier. I want to mention to people that if they do want to go to that, to the masterclass that we offer, where we do sell the Contigo approach at the end of the masterclass. So you get an extra special bonus if you enroll during the masterclass. But the masterclass is really intended to be a free offer for any pediatric therapist who wants to take their work outdoors in nature. And so it gives you the 5-step framework to be an effective and confident nature-based pediatric therapist. And you don't have to buy the course. It's free, an hour of like, it basically shares my favorite resources for getting started. So free for people to get started. They can go to naturemasterclass.com is the website. And to say bye, I just want to say, Patricia, your ability to form a community and just a supportive space for people in our profession to explore the ideas and the creative ways to be an OT that are out there, your ability to create that community is just top notch. And I just want to say thank you, because you're doing really great work and meaningful work that's going to impact and is impacting the lives of so many people in our field. So I love you. That's all.
I love you back. And thank you so much. That means a lot, that feedback. It's been so wonderful and it feels so good and it feels so right.
Yeah.
So I also love where my OT career has evolved. And,
yes. You
know, when the stars align, you know, again, with your vision and your purpose and, you know, what you know, it just feels so wonderful. So
this
platform has really given me the opportunity to meet fellow OTs who are kind of along the same path. So I cannot even say how much, you know, each of these episodes, each of these encounters really light me up. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It was just a joy. Bye.
And that wraps up another inspiring episode of the Uncommon OT series. Connect with me at www.transitionsot.com. And don't forget to sign up to be part of the Transitions OT community. By doing so, you'll receive my latest compiled list of Uncommon OT practice settings, the latest news on mentoring offerings, Uncommon OT live events, non-traditional OT resources, and more. You may also follow me on my social media pages on Instagram and LinkedIn. And if you love this episode, head on over to Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, and Google Podcasts to follow, rate, and leave a review. I also ask you to consider pledging your support to my passion podcast project by being a patron on Patreon. It is very much appreciated. Sending big OT love. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.